Hey, everybody. Welcome to Guys Who Law, presented by Law & Crime. I'm Jesse Weber.
I'm Andrew Esbrook.
And on this podcast, we tackle the most interesting legal stories, but from a different perspective, and that is a millennial perspective.
And today, we got a very exciting episode. We have our first guest, and even though this is Guys Who Law, we have a girl who actually doesn't law. She's a non-lawyer, but she does work for Law & Crime. She's our top producer for the network. She's a crime and legal news fanatic. She knows more about it than anybody at the company. So Virginia Warner is going to join us today. And welcome, Virginia.
Hi, happy to be here.
What am I, the only one that claps? Now, it's funny because this is the first time you're hearing Virginia on the radio. I hear Virginia in my ear every day. And I feel like you're really going to like her voice on the radio, on the podcast.
Today, we have two exciting topics to talk about. And I feel like the first one, we've been dying to talk about a Trump topic for a while.
We have.
We were talking about like Stormy Daniels, the pardoning stuff, the Mueller stuff, and we knew at some point we would incorporate it into an episode. But today's the day.
He basically, Trump said at one point he feels like his presidency is like a television show. It really is. Episode one, Stormy Daniels. Episode two, Mueller investigation. And number three will be North Korea. Something big happened this week, right? You heard something about it?
Yeah, so that's going to be our first topic today. We're going to talk about generally what happened during the North Korean summit, and specifically, was Trump obligated to discuss human rights violations during that summit?
There's a law that a lot of people might not be aware of. We're going to talk about it. And that's not the only thing we're talking about today. As Andrew said, we have another case. So as big as that one is, we have an even bigger topic. And that's right. You guessed it. We're talking about lemonade.
It's an epidemic going around the country now where young kids are starting lemonade stands where with improper permits, they're not paying taxes, and they're being shut down by the government. So we're going to go into what's legal, what's not, what should these kids be doing, is it right, is it wrong, and some of the hard-hitting analysis that goes along with lemonade stands.
Virginia, North Korea and lemonade, are these the topics that you felt you would be talking about today?
I was hoping it would be the Beyonce version of lemonade, but I'm okay with the lemonade stand story, too.
Maybe that'll be in the next episode. We'll have to see. Now, before we begin, we have a very special sponsor on law Guys Who Law.
So this episode is sponsored by the new book, Lincoln's Last Trial, The Murder Case That Propelled Him to the Presidency, that came out on June 5th. Get it on Amazon. Get it in stores. It's all around. It's written by ABC News Chief Legal Affairs Anchor Dan Abrams and David Fisher. The book covers the true story of Abraham Lincoln's last murder trial, which played out in the nation's newspapers as he began his presidential campaign.
I'm actually reading it. I really like it. I'm not just saying it because it's a sponsor. It's a really good book. It takes you behind the scenes, and I never really knew Lincoln as a lawyer, so it's good to see that.
And he's not kidding, because Jesse texted me this weekend and said, I started the book. It's really good.
Yeah, I wanted you to know that. See, I do the work with my sponsors. Like, I want to know who we're sponsoring. We don't just sponsor everyone here on Guys Who Law. Anyway, if you want to sponsor, please reach out to us. We need all the help we can get. All right, ready to start?
Yeah, so Jesse, why don't you run us through the North Korean stuff?
Okay, so for anybody who was living under a rock for, the past 50 years, we've had a lot of problems with North Korea ever since the Korean War when we backed South Korea. But something historic happened this past week. President Donald Trump and the chairman or supreme leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, held a summit in Singapore. This was huge. This was on June 12, 2018. This was huge because it was only, about a year ago that they were threatening each other with nuclear war?
Yeah, Trump called him a little rocket man.
You know, little rocket man. He's weak. And then he called him a dotard. I think he called Trump a dotard.
Is that how he responded?
I think that's what he called him. He called him a lot of different names. The tension was so high between these two. But then something happened. All of a sudden, maybe it was during the Olympics when tensions started to ease out, there became the idea that there could be a summit between these two leaders. And really, the goal was about nuclear weapon proliferation. Can we have North Korea stop their nuclear weapons program? Because really, a war between North Korea and the United States would basically be like Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the end of the world.
Or anybody in that region, because Japan and South Korea was both they were both worried for their own countries because there were missile tests going on where the missiles were traveling over the country. So it was getting to a point where everybody was freaking out, and this was kind of the first time where things were starting to calm down. It was looking brighter in some people's eyes, and they met to discuss these issues.
And just to tell you that, we usually, towards the later part of the segment, we talk about if this subject matters or not. Just want to let you know how much this means. One of my friends was in Hawaii when, remember when that alarm went off that they thought North Korea attacked Hawaii, Virginia? Do you remember that?
I remember that. It was a mistaken alert sent out to everyone's phones.
Right. Somebody pressed the wrong button. My friend was there with his girlfriend when that happened.
Oh, so it wasn't an actual missile. It was just a mistaken...
It was a text message alert.
I kind of remember that
briefly
happening. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Why'd you thought a real missile hit Hawaii?
No, not hit Hawaii, but maybe
it got close to Hawaii.
I don't know.
When we talk about how much this matters, I'm going to say it right now. This is a huge issue. Now, we've been talking, I talked to you about the idea that this is about nuclear weapons. You keep hearing about nuclear weapons. But there's a little legal issue that not everyone was thinking about. Well, they were. But maybe this was not something Donald Trump was thinking about so much. And it's an issue about human rights. As Andrew said at the beginning of the program, did the president, the first time that a sitting president ever met the leader of North Korea, would he bring up, did he have to bring up human rights violations? Well, there's an act. There's an act that we found. It's called the North Korea Sanctions and Policy Enhancement Act that was passed by Congress in 2016. It requires the president to investigate and sanction people and entities who are complicit in human rights abuses in North Korea. It actually imposes a ban, a financial ban, and freezes on the government and people that are violating this. It even makes a plan for the president to outline that the people of North Korea have a way to have communication, that they have mass communication. It places people on a list, like a bad people list. It's called specifically designated nationals list. People on this list, bad guys, are generally unable to use financial systems. They're forbidden from traveling to the U.S. So there's all these different violations of human rights abuses. And according to this law, the president had to bring this up when he met Kim Jong-un, or at least not then. He eventually had to bring it out. And the question is, did he ultimately do it?
So from what we saw at this summit, which first of all, I found fascinating. I watched the whole thing that night, stayed up way too late and was watching everything go on. But from what I read, according to this law, and as you know, North Korea has had tons of human rights violations over its history. It has labor camps. They assassinate defectors and political people who are corrupt and are disloyal to their administration. So,
and many times they're taken away from their homes and their families aren't even told where they're. I mean, they're sent to prison camps and work camps, and their families don't even know where they are.
Yeah, there's basically a lot of bad shit going on, and many people were worried that Trump was so focused on the nuclear part of this that he was just forgetting all the human rights violations. And we were giving them so much, and he hadn't even addressed the human rights stuff. The thing is, we don't really know what was actually discussed in these meetings during the summit because they were off the record. What happened is the first thing he did was he had a one-on-one meeting with Kim Jong-un, who's the leader of North Korea, for 45 minutes. After that, they walked out, and then they had a meeting with both heads of their policy teams, and that lasted for a few hours after that, but it was also off the record. So the only thing we know is what came out of the statement, which they signed after that meeting, and then Trump had a very interesting press conference, which went on over an hour, which he talked about what they discussed.
So just to let you know, so this statement basically says that the United States and North Korea will agree to establish relations for peace and prosperity. They'll work together trying to create a lasting peace in the Korean Peninsula. North Korea will move towards complete denuclearization. This is all good. And then even this other strange part that we found out, that North Korea is going to work towards recovering all of the remains of dead soldiers from the Korean War and ship them back to the United States, which is something, by the way, I never heard of, but President Trump afterwards said this is something that families kept talking about, that they wanted the remains of family members. It's great. This is all great. But what did we not hear? We didn't hear anything about human rights. Nothing about human rights.
And people asked him about that in the press conference, and he had, you know, kind of touched on it briefly, saying, yeah, we definitely touched on that. But I know, for example, with that with the remains point that they put into the statement, during the press conference, he brought up that he was like, it was so smart of me. In the last minute of our meeting with Kim Jong-un, I requested that they return the dead bodies of our fallen ancestors. and he agreed to that. We'll do it immediately, Mr. Trump.
It's so crazy that he gave such a wishy-washy answer about the living human people that are living in North Korea. Like, we're talking about labor camps, forced labor, prisons, where you have absolutely no rights. You're tortured. There are people getting raped. There's forced abortions. It's like, and we're like, I get it. People want their families' remains returned to them. But to give, like, such a strong answer about that and ignore, like, what everyone really wants to know, like, are we going to help the living people in North Korea? So, that's a question for me.
So Britt Baer from Fox News interviewed him, and he said, sir, he's a killer. He's executing people. And Trump goes, you know, he's a tough guy. But, you know, when you think about it, hey, when you take over a country, tough country with tough people, you take it over from your father. I don't care who you are, what you are, how much of an advantage you have. You know, if you can do that at 27 years old, that's 1 in 10,000 could do that. And he goes, there's a lot of bad people. There's a lot of bad people, a lot of bad countries.
That's a very good impression, by the way.
But the point, thank you very much. But did you feel like he was here when he said
it? I did.
So he's doing this wishy-washy answer, but this is the way that I think about it, okay? I can't say I'm surprised at all. This was like a very awkward meeting just between people. It's kind of like, I'm not trying to dumb it down, but you know when you want to introduce somebody to your family, a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and you want everything to go perfectly? I hope nobody says anything bad. I hope my boyfriend or girlfriend doesn't say anything bad. They're meeting, and he was so careful not to say anything offensive, not to say anything bad, not to get on his bad side. I mean, he basically acted like his best friend, and I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen.
Because human rights violations are obviously a touchy subject when you're sitting directly across from the person who is implementing a lot of those human rights violations. So according to the law, you know, obviously if they get farther into negotiations, at some point he's going to have to discuss that, because the U.S. legally can't lift its sanctions without North Korea addressing the human rights violations, along with a few other points. But let me ask you guys, do you think at this summit he should have brought up the human rights violations to Kim Jong-un? He might have, but we don't know. But do you think he should have?
I don't think he did, but I think any president should have. And that's why our presidents so rarely communicate with the leaders of North Korea.
See, I think he probably said to him, listen, you know, my people are going to have to talk to you about some of these things. But he doesn't know what it is. You think he knows what that law is? You think he knows what that is? His people are going to have a word with his people about
it. He's like, my people will get into the details with your people. Don't worry about it. We'll figure out after.
Can't you just see him saying to this guy, obviously everything was through a translator, you know, we know you haven't been that great. You know, you haven't been doing a lot of good things, but we want you to start getting on the path of good. And that was like his word. He's like, yeah, I brought it up.
So, I mean, what I think is this meeting was mostly, in my opinion, about building a relationship. And when you're building a relationship with someone or a country who you're going to be negotiating with, you're not going to – the first thing you do is not attack their biggest flaw. It's establishing some sort of common ground where you can build from there. So I actually see why he might not have brought up the human rights point immediately, because he needed to invoke some sense of trust, some aspect of trust with Kim Jong-un, so that they can continue these negotiations.
I'm going to tell this right now. If he didn't bring it up or basically touched on it, I think he did the right thing. I really do. I don't think it was the time to do it. I think he does it maybe later on. Because at the end of the day, what did we just see? We saw something historic. And I don't care if you hate Trump or you love him or whatever. This was a historic moment. And for anybody who's sitting there and doesn't even know what's going on, this was history, and it's going to affect you. It's going to affect people moving forward, because really think about it. So if you think about young people, millennials, whatever, why do I care about this? if North Korea eventually gets foreign investment and it gets casinos, it gets hotels, it gets clubs, that is going to be the new place that people vacation. There you go. Spring break in North Korea. If there isn't even a North Korea and they just don't combine the two, it's going to be the place to be. It's going to be like the new Shanghai.
And that's why I think North Korea has come to the table at this point. They have been hurt by the economic sanctions that the U.S. and other countries have imposed on them. They've finally gotten to a point where they've reached their nuclear capabilities. So they have more leverage at the table. They feel like they're more respected. So if Kim Jong-un can come away from this as a hero economically to his people who are suffering, you know, this might be a turn for North Korea. Who knows that that's going to happen? This administration has done a lot of shady things in North Korea. So, but I think that's the hope, hopefully, from his point.
Virginia, if you were sitting in the meeting and he's like, Trump says, you're one of his advisors, like, I need you to bring it up to him. I need you to bring the, I can't do it myself. What would you say? What would you have said to the leader of North Korea about this? How would you have said it?
I know exactly how I would have said
it. What would you say?
I would have said, Mr. President.
Wait, he's chairman or supreme leader. So,
oh, this, I'm saying this. No, I'm saying this to
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Oh, okay.
This is what I would say to him. He I want you to go into this meeting.
He doesn't speak English, by the way.
Donald Trump? Oh, barely. Oh, I know. It's like, I want you to go into this meeting, and I really want you to grab him by the Pyongyang. That's
and
what I'd say.
That, I mean, he. Yeah, that's actually pretty funny. But what would you say to the leader?
What would I say?
What would you say to Kim? What would you say to Kim Jong-un?
I may not have brought it up in the first meeting, but it's on my mind and it's on everybody's mind.
Would you send him a ping? Have something to talk to you about later. Don't forget.
Dot dot dot.
Dot dot dot.
A
hey,
ping.
Can we talk? Question mark with this with the inquiry emoji face.
Text. I always get confused too.
I thought this was for millennials, guys. A ping.
Is that an old term?
I think I've never heard it before.
We're on the late side.
I'm getting a nod.
We have a a very special guest also in the studio, Amanda Fine. She is our researcher and she's been doing a great job. That's how we get
she
so knowledgeable
ping
about this.
Is an old.
She's nodding her head saying, don't mention me, don't mention me. That's okay.
She's the brains behind the operation.
She is the brains behind the operation.
You know, I'd have a couple questions for Dennis Rodman also.
Well, Dennis Rodman was crying on CNN because he finally feels vindicated about everything.
Oh, and did you see this? This is my favorite part of the whole night. He was wearing a shirt that said potcoin.com. He was sponsored by the company Potcoin, which is a cryptocurrency dedicated to the marijuana industry.
Is there somebody in Trump's position, is there somebody in his administration who's about to be fired and they need to fill up the spot? Because I think Rodman would be a great addition to the administration.
Probably.
A great addition.
A fantastic addition.
And what has our country come to when Dennis Rodman is the go-to in terms of knowledge on both sides?
It is literally like a TV show. Like we've got an ex-reality TV star, a authoritarian dictator, and a former NBA basketball player?
They all walk into a bar.
Like, this is, it's insanity.
And that's why I think they made this movie trailer, because it is kind of like a movie. So, I know, Virginia, you brought this up to us before. So
well, they left out all the best parts. If they forgot the NBA player and the reality show, but.
Oh, well, that he was in The Apprentice?
Yeah.
So, why don't you tell us about the video a little bit?
Okay, so there was a video released on the White House's Facebook page from the Trump administration. He also showed this video to Kim Jong-un during their
meeting on an iPad.
On an iPad, and he called it a tape.
Yeah.
He said, you want to watch this tape? And it's just, it's like a movie trailer for what their meeting would be. It's like all stock videos and like voiceover narration.
It's
like,
about the future of their relationship and what can come of North Korea and international relations. And it's the first thing they played at the press conference.
I just want to say, it was upsetting and creepy and horrible. Like, it was the worst movie trailer ever. It looked like it was made, like,
in the 90s.
Maybe by a student.
Well, it was, first of all, they used a voiceover actor, which, by the way, you never see in movie trailers anymore. This isn't Die Hard from 1995. It was like, two leaders enter into this world. One will come out. Will he? What do you want to see for your future? Prosperity, investment.
A new day, a new life.
Will this leader choose to advance his country and be part of a new world? Be the hero of his people? Will he shake the hand of peace and enjoy prosperity like he has never seen? A great life? or more isolation? Which path will be chosen? Featuring President Donald Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un in a meeting to remake history, to shine in the sun. One moment, one choice. What if? The future remains to be written.
There was a shot of Sylvester Stallone in the White House, followed quickly by white horses running in a lake, and then a basketball player dunking. And this
was my favorite part.
Amazing, which is what it made me think about. How old is President Trump? He's 71?
I think around that.
This guy's 35 years old. He likes movies. He likes the image of American culture. I thought it was genius.
I actually thought it was a good move, too, because also this video is obviously going to go viral around the internet. So the Trump supporters, when they see that, they're going to love that. And even people who aren't Trump supporters who see that, they're going to be like, oh, this could be our future with North Korea. And I kind of, when I saw this video, I was like, this kind of seems like something that North Korea would do. Like, they would put out a video like this in terms of doing propaganda for their own country, but this was the American version of it, basically.
Oh, yeah. And I think that it's such a ridiculous situation. But it also gives the idea for this guy, wait a minute. If I agree to this, an American investment, maybe I can hang out with celebrities. Maybe I can get my own reality TV show like Donald Trump. I'm telling you, 35-year-old guy getting involved with American movies, American Hollywood, I got to see him being kind of interested in
it. They were also focusing on the tourism aspect of it, that North Korea has some of the best beaches in the world, and that if you open your gates to the international community, investment is going to flood in, and this will be the new go-to spot for vacation.
I mean, I'd go.
I'm very curious.
Well, I've watched a lot of documentaries about North Korea. I don't want to go for tourism. I want to go to see what it's like now. I don't really want to go because it sounds scary. But aren't you curious?
So you would go. You want to go now, but like if there was a.
I would like to watch a reality show set in North Korea now, so I could see what it's like.
See what's actually going on.
Yeah.
But if there was like an Atlantis opened up on the North Korean beaches, would you go then?
No, I wouldn't go to that.
Do you think they talked about the James Franco movie?
The interview?
Yeah.
Well, they're the ones who leaked it, right? North Korea had hacked Sony, and that's how it got out early.
You think that was brought up at all?
No, absolutely not.
No, right?
No.
Imagine if the interview became a topic of conversation. I don't know. I thought it was funny watching them together. You have to imagine it was a little awkward. It's awkward. Even like Trump is getting, like when they're all together, he was trying to think of ways to be comical and humorous, which is his disarming capability. It works. When he shook his hand, he put his arm on him. It works. He's taller than him. He's comforting. And he did this thing. He goes, you're getting all good pictures of us, making us all look nice and thin and handsome. And the camera pans over to Kim Jong-un, and he just has like deer in a headlights look. Like, what is this guy saying?
That probably translated so badly. Like, I can imagine his translator just saying that to Kim Jong-un. And it comes out, like, not as a joke. Probably comes out the worst way possible. And in North Korea, honestly, like, I think they want people to look a little plumper, so it seems like they, like, have food there and they're not starving their people. So I think he's probably proud that he has some extra meat on him.
Years ago, it was cool to be fat. Like, the fatter you are, the cooler you are, because the fatter you are and the more pale you are means you're not out, like, in the fields working. You're sitting back in the house. But now everybody's like, now being, you know, in good shape is a sign of prosperity. But like being fat and pale and out of shape shows, oh, I have people working for me.
But I heard too, like during the Olympics, the big thing then was they had all these North Korean cheerleaders for one of their joint teams with South Korea. And I heard that the criteria for those cheerleaders is that they had to be a certain weight so that they looked healthy. So North Korea is trying to definitely control its image in terms of like showing the people are nourished and that sort of thing.
Wait, let's just take a step back. Did you guys see the salute between Trump and the general? North Korean general?
I saw it.
So he goes in for the handshake. The general puts his hand up to salute. Trump then goes in for the salute and the general goes in for the handshake and they keep missing each other. I mean, it's just, is that like a cultural divide or is that, what's going on there?
He has trouble with handshakes.
He does.
You know?
He held on to some, I think it was like the French president's hand and like guided him through like a child. Did you see that?
And he had that one long handshake.
With Kim Jong-un?
No, the Japanese Prime Minister.
Oh, Abe. Prime Minister Abe.
Like, yeah. Way too long of a handshake, and just the guy's like pulling his arm away, and he like won't let go.
It's a power move. That's what you got to do.
Really? Yeah.
It's hard to watch.
It is. Remember when he pushed the guy out of the way?
Oh, yeah, he went in front?
Yeah, Montenegro, right?
But honestly, a lot of people were giving Trump flack about that salute because they think that that's improper protocol, like saluting a foreign military official who's your enemy. But in this scenario, I think he was just trying to be respectful and like create a good relationship, and I don't think, like, I wouldn't look too much into it.
He's saluting the rank, the office. He's not saluting the man so much. And by the way,
I don't think he thought about it that hard. I think he was like, "Oh, I'm just gonna do this thing now and then keep walking."
No, see, here's what I think. I think he, yeah, I agree with you. Like, he doesn't know. Who knows the proper protocol in North Korea?
Well, someone should have probably told him.
Well, it's not the North.
They don't know. Nobody knows. The country's been isolated for years.
Well, it's not the North Korean protocol. It's that the United States officials, military, politicians, in the past, it seems like they have not saluted foreign military officials who are their enemies. And I think Barack Obama had gotten flack in the past for doing something similar, but there are a lot of presidents who will avoid doing that.
Then why did the general salute first? Was it a test for Trump? Like, Trump went in for the handshake first. He didn't do for the salute. The guy goes for the salute. What do you do? It's an awkward position to put him in.
I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I honestly probably would have done the salute too if that was him.
I would have given him a pound. Well, pound and a hug.
They said that he should have nodded and then shook his hand. That they said that would have been the proper protocol.
Yeah. All right, so that is North Korea. We're gonna, all three of us are gonna do as we do each week, a 1 to 10 test. The 1 to 10, how much this matters. So 10 being the most important issue that affects everybody, and 0 being like Roy Rogers. No one knows where it is. No one goes to it anymore.
Like the fast food chain?
The fast food chain.
I didn't know what that was.
There you go. My point exactly. Okay. Everyone, let's write down our numbers.
1 through 10?
1 through 10.
How important?
0 to 10. 0 to 10. When everyone's ready, let me know.
All right. So since we have a guest here today, why don't we have Virginia go first?
Yeah, Virginia, go first.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay.
What's your reasoning?
I think it's an international issue. It doesn't just affect our country. It doesn't just affect North Korea. It affects a lot of places and a lot of people. And so I'm going to give it an 8.
Andrew?
We're talking lives at stake.
That's a fair assessment.
A lot of pressure now. But I am actually in that room, and I went with an 8.9. You can use decimals, by the way.
I didn't know that.
It's like figure skating. So I think that this was a pivotal moment in history. The Korean War technically still hasn't been ended. There was never a treaty signed that ended the Korean War. And this is the first time that two leaders, the head of the president of the United States and the leader of North Korea, are coming together to actually discuss these issues. So a lot of people are saying that this is elevating Kim Jong-un, and it's going to make it a lot worse for us. We're giving credibility to a regime that has made numerous human rights violations. But, the rhetoric from us hasn't worked in the past. The sanctions itself have helped, but they haven't worked either. They've still been on a path to develop nuclear weapons. So this meeting is a pivotal point, whether it works or not, that could take us to a new stage of this story. Maybe the Korean War will finally come to an end. Maybe they will start disarming their nuclear arsenal. And maybe some of these human rights violations, they'll start to fix them, but maybe it won't. But I think something probably had to be done. And that starts with talking to people. And a lot of people disagree with that. But in my opinion, that's why this is really important, because it's going to set a different atmosphere for the international stage on this issue.
I agree with you. I give this a 9.5. I really do, because, again, if a conflict were to break out between the two nations, that would affect the entire world. It really would. And I kind of like what you said. If this works, if it's successful, and we always talk about, like, who are America's main enemies? North Korea, Iran, ISIS. We talk about this. If you can get rid of one enemy, not through war, but through diplomacy. And the question is really, like, how much are you supposed to forgive a nation for what it did? Because people can say the same thing. What happens if this was Hitler, you know, and Hitler was still in power and, you know, you're shaking hands with Hitler? What would you have done? But at the same point, if this can be a model to somehow create peace in the world, I think it's pretty amazing. And it really does affect everybody on this planet. And plus, if, as I said, if North Korea becomes a developed nation, everyone's going to vacation there and go there. So I give it 9.5.
So just so you're 9, you're 9.5. I'm an 8.9. You're an 8, Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next topic. So we have a really hard-hitting topic for the next part of this episode. And there has been a crusade going on in this country about shutting down lemonade stands.
Natural transition from North Korea.
the kids have been popping up, you know, on the street, in front of their homes. I mean, you know, when you were a kid, you had a lemonade stand.
You tried to make
a couple dollars.
I'm sorry. I've never seen one. I don't know. Really? I'm in New York. I don't see lemonade stands. Amanda's looking at me like I'm crazy. I've seen them, but who's drinking lemonade? I don't feel like anybody drinks.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island.
Where did you grow up?
New Jersey. We had lemonade.
I never saw one person with a lemonade stand. Who, by the way, I feel like people don't drink lemonade that much.
I love lemonade.
The only reason I might drink lemonade is if someone was selling it at a lemonade stand conveniently located on my street.
Clearly, this story applies to you then. So.
And you always see the cute little kids, and
yeah.
It makes you feel like you have to, you know,
you
contribute,
want to buy
and
one.
It's like a nice drink. But basically, so what's been happening legally is in various states, these kids have been launching lemonade stands, and towns and states have been fining them and shutting down their stands because they're in violation of different permitting laws, different health code laws, different labor laws. And recently, there was an article that came out this week that there's an organization that sprouted up to combat this epidemic that's been going on of lemonade stands being shut down. It's called Legal Aid. Pun intended, like lemonade, legal aid.
I see what they did there.
So they basically, if a kid gets fined for having a lemonade stand, they'll pay it off up to a certain amount. So very, very nice of them. But, you know, the question is really, are kids violating the law? Are these kids criminals?
Who cares? I mean, what's the point of a permit here? I mean, what are they doing that's so wrong? I don't care if they sell it on the middle of a street. I mean, well, it's actually really dangerous, so probably don't do that. But you know what I mean.
So let me just say, I agree. Who cares? Like, let them get their entrepreneurial spirit out there, like, sell some lemonade. But what they're doing could actually be illegal for a couple of different reasons. So it depends on the state. Each state has different laws, but...
By the way, Andrew's the one who reported them. That's what he's going to say. You know, I know a
you
guy who called them.
Laws.
Yeah. You know, like the soup Nazi in Seinfeld? It's like the lemonade Nazi.
No lemonade for you.
No lemonade for you. So.
Andrew's in his apartment with the windows drawn on his phone. I see kids. They're selling lemonade from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. No, I don't know who this is. Bye.
So you're actually violating Section 504 of the local ordinances. But no, this is what's, I guess, happening. When you start, I guess, a lemonade stand, it could be considered a business or like a food business.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling a product. So in most states or some states, you need a permit to start a business. And these kids obviously aren't doing that. The cost of getting a permit would probably be more than they make in a year from selling lemonade. Second, there in some districts there's zoning and local ordinance rules saying that you can't sell food, you know, this close to a school or to a playground.
Wait, back up one second. Yeah. Are you saying this is a health violation?
Well, it could be. That's the third thing.
Oh,
so
okay.
With food and beverages, a lot of times, you know, certain inspections are required just to make sure that you're selling something that's safe to consume. So these kids are making their own lemonade, homemade, unless they're using Minute Maid, and who knows what's in it? That's what these people are saying. But I kind of always imagine. Have you guys seen Problem Child 2?
No,
I've never seen that.
I don't know what that is.
It's one of my favorite movies. It's with John Ritter, and the first scene is the kid in the movie starting a lemonade stand. Or no, he goes to a lemonade stand across the street, and his friends leave for a second, and in the lemonade jar, instead of he takes the lemonade, pours it out, and pisses in it. And
so, and so, I had a feeling you were going
to
say that.
And sells that to people. So that's what these that's what the government's worried about. That's what these kids can do on the street.
Virginia, you were right. Classic Icebrook.
Classic
Icebrook.
Classic.
Problem child too.
Classic move. Why would you would you eat and drink anything off the street? Like, let me rephrase that.
Yes, would you, sure.
Like, if someone's selling lemonade, you don't see a Minute Maid container like Andrew said, would you just drink it?
Probably not. But what? If it was from kids, I would. When I read this story, I wasn't that worried about the kids and the permits. I was like, sure, let them do whatever they want. But you know what really struck me?
What?
Conspiracy.
What do you mean?
Going back to who was calling in these lemonade stands and the fact that Country Time Lemonade set up this legal aid and now we're reading about it in the paper, like in the new, the paper. Oh my God, why did I even say that?
It's a millennial show.
The interwebs.
I read it on the internet and I think that Country Time Lemonade, legal aid, is calling in these lemonade stands and getting them shut down so that they can look good coming in and saving the day.
Wow. Do you have any evidence
of
this?
That is a conspiracy theory. It's Lemonade Gate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Who cares? Who else would call it in? Who else would call in a little kid selling lemonade?
So what are they gaining out of it?
Publicity. They set up the legal aid.
It's probably a nonprofit, I think.
Let's double check what you read about it.
See, I feel like this
is
like
from Country Time Lemonade that they're the ones doing it. The legal aid thing.
I feel like this is like a bad 80s movie, like the kids against the evil government. You know what I mean? Like they're running around, they're trying to do what they want, and that's kind of the way I see it.
But I mean, are there certain lessons that kids need to learn? For example, if I'm selling lemonade
Country
on the street,
Times.
They started it. All right.
Country Times Legal Aid. They're the ones giving the kids the money to pay for the permits to sell lemonade. Not only are they getting publicity, they're letting the kids sell the lemonade on the street. So they're getting more customers, too.
And they're the ones peeing in the lemonade. Wait, no, sorry, I'm lost. I'm still thinking about it.
No, because they'd have to get the permit.
So then they pee in it once they get the lemonade.
Well, they'd have to pass, you know, the test.
So this is your conspiracy theory.
Yes.
So you heard it here first. We'll see what pans out in the media with this. This is a story that's obviously
I think there
covering.
Should be an investigation started into this. What do you guys think?
Country Time is peeing in the lemonade and selling it to children with permits. Wait, I'm still not getting it. It's some
legal aid, just not the way you think.
And okay. Country Time is a lemonade company?
Yeah, okay. It's like the same thing as Minute Maid. It's like the powder.
Okay, I'm a Minute Maid guy, so that's probably
I
why.
Mean,
very loyal. So they're paying for the permits, and then they're also paying any fines that occur as a result of the government cracking down on these kids. But one thing I found interesting is I was wondering, if I'm a kid selling lemonade on the street, is my income from that lemonade stand taxable? Is Uncle Sam going to take part of my
is this what you're thinking about?
Yeah. So I did some investigation, and it depends what state you live in, but technically, if you're making above $400 or $500 in most states from these stands, you got to pay income tax on it. So
that's a lot of lemonade.
Well, there might be some kids out there who are selling that much and they're evading taxes. They're criminals.
As bad as I thought the police, the officers who are going up to the kids and citing them for lack of permit, the people, the tax collectors that come by and think that, if even me.
I agree. Lock them up.
Lock them up.
We should call in and make sure they have permits.
We'll go call from Andrew's apartment.
And sales tax too. Like maybe they should be charging sales tax on their lemonade. Why are they getting away with that? And every other business out there has to charge sales tax.
Because Country Time hasn't thought of that yet.
You should
now that they hear this, they will though.
You both should just quit this job and go basically represent lemonade kids and work on their whole.
No, campaign. I want to do a crackdown on this Country Time conspiracy. I'm serious. I think that they're calling the police on the lemonade stands, and the police are like, I guess we have to go shut it down. They don't have a permit.
So that they can come out of this like heroes.
And because then they've paid for the permit or paid the fine.
Right.
Huh. Yeah. Is it too, it's too big of a stretch?
Actually, no, it sounds pretty good. I hope it was true. Because can we send you in underground? Can you pretend to be a child?
I'll start working for Country Time Lemonade.
No.
Lemonade stand? I'll open a lemonade stand.
Virginia, you look very young. I feel like we could have you be like, maybe you could pass for like 11 years old and then and have you be a lemonade.
Okay. So listen, anything for a proper investigation. I'll do it. I'll take one for the team.
I neither sponsored this or endorsed it, but all right.
So should we write this one?
Yeah.
All right, let's write it down.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go first on this one. So I'm going to give this a 5.5.
Whoa.
And when I first saw this story, I was expecting I would go way lower. But most kids grow up starting lemonade stand. And now they need to be properly educated on what the laws are. If you want to be entrepreneurial, you got to learn eventually that Uncle Sam is going to take a little piece of it. So this could be important. Honestly, in my opinion, I think that you know, this is something the government should be turning a blind eye to. But it's pretty interesting that most of these lemonade stands that are opening around the country and kids are doing are, they might be illegal. So that's why I give it 5.5.
I give it a 1. I was going to give it lower than a 0, but I give it a 1 just because Virginia might crack down on the Country Time illegal conspiracy going on. And that would be awesome. So, Virginia, that 1 is for you.
I don't know what to give it. I'm interested.
You're the
in
one who's investigating
it. Because there's a story here, and I think we need to look into it.
You can't just abstain, though.
No, you have to.
We've never had an abstain before.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a. I'm gonna give it a 10.
The most
asteroid hitting the Earth.
Yeah.
Hey, this is important to me.
So if you give it a 10, that means you can never go above this in the future. What if the conspiracy comes out and you start to investigate that? That's going to need to be above the 10 because that story is going to be even bigger than the one we just discussed.
He's saying maybe
settle for a 9. I stand by my answer.
All right. Okay. She's holding strong.
We've learned a lot today. We've learned a lot about lemonade, Virginia being an investigative reporter into stories that don't matter. We've learned about North Korea. Virginia, thank you so much for coming on. Did you have fun today?
I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Come back soon.
All right, guys and girls on Guys Who Law. We'll be back next week.